Session number 12709, Mr. Alfred Davis, Reel 3.
Mr. Albert Davis, Reel 3. How much pay did you receive in the militia, Mr. Davis?
We received 2 bob a day then. And out of that 2 bob a day, which was 14 bob a week, I allotted seven and six home to my mother.
Were there any other deductions from it? But that the army made?
Only a few pence for odds and ends that we'd lost or anything. Not very much.
How did you spend your leisure time when you weren't on parade or doing whatever you're doing?
Well, if we could, if we got the time, enough time, well, we'd have a walk downtown and round the pubs. Or down the Dingle at Shrewsbury. Or if we hadn't had time, we'd walk around the riverbanks at the back of the barracks. Or spend our time in the canteen, game darts, or chatting cards, anything to pass the time away.
What was your food like?
Well, the very first meal I had was hard-boiled eggs, and they stank rotten. Everybody left them, I think. I didn't eat mine. They smelt rotten. But after that, rotten or no rotten, you got hungry and you ate it. But after that, it wasn't too bad. It improved as time went on.
Was there a basic food that you tended to get most days?
Not really. There was bacon, egg in the morning, sausages, but all plain but fairly good food. No cereals then, of course, apart from porridge. Sometimes you got porridge. But not very much. In the diet there was a lot of eggs, hard boiled especially. But by this time we got used to the smell of them, whether they're good or bad.
And this would be taken in a main dining hall.
Yes. You paraded each time for a meal. You marched to the meal to the dining hall, sat down, had your meal. And then you wandered back on your own, ready for the next parade.
Was it a cafeteria system? You move around with your tray or something of that nature?
Pardon?
Was it a cafeteria system, collecting your food?
No, I think nearly everybody was accommodated at one sitting. Because it was quite a large place and it seated a lot of people. Just ordinary plain benches and seats to sit on.
How was the food brought to you? How did you actually get it?
It was more or less brought down with orderlies, camp orderlies. I just throw it out on the table, pass that along, till everybody got his fair share.
Did the officers come round to find if there was any complaints?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Was that a daily basis?
No. It probably... weekly, ask if there was any complaints. There was always complaints, of course, but not much done about it. Oh, well, we'll see what we can do next time. But it did improve, as I say, as time went on. And things got a little better after each complaint. But most lads, they would rather go downtown and have a good fish and chip supper. The canteen wasn't too clever either. I mean, you'd get a snack in there, but not a very good meal.
Who ran the canteen? The army?
Yes, yes.
Was there much gambling going on with the men?
Yeah, well, a fair amount. Not excess. But you'd get the small groups that were real gamblers, sort of thing. Cards, especially cards. They gamble on anything, some of them.
Did the authorities encourage it?
Well, a lot of things forbidden like that, but they closed a blind eye to it. You know, without it, it got out of hand. If there's any trouble started, then that was after it was finished. But as long as no trouble started, they closed a blind eye.
Do you recall any instances when there were problems? Do you recall any instances when there were problems over gambling? And
no, I don't. Not really. I've heard there being trouble there, but I wasn't there to verify that. And whoever was concerned, the sergeant or whoever was on duty at that time, put it right. And that was the end of it. There was nothing serious that went on as far as I know. You know, just the ordinary, everyday gambling.
Were you given leave?
Oh, yes. Yeah, we had a few days leave. I went home. To me, it wasn't far away, only 16 miles. A few days leave, I'm back again. Once, I think, I had leave. Yes, once. In that 3 months that we were at Shrewsbury.
What was the attitude to your family and your friends when you came back on your first leave?
When we came back off leave?
When you went on leave, what was the attitude of your friends and your people that you knew now that you were in the army?
Well, they were a bit apprehensive. You know, we felt as if we were sort of outcasts. The uniform wasn't too clever, as I said before. And it wasn't until we got enough money to get them altered, put into shape to fit, that they really looked anything like smart uniforms. After that, they accepted us and wanted to know what we're doing. And
the war would make a difference between soldiering, as it were, in peacetime and then in a wartime situation.
Oh, yes.
Attitudes would change.
Yes, yeah.
And this was so in your own experience.
Yes, yeah. I mean, remember, we were only supposed to be in for 6 months. So after 2 months, or 2.5 months, I think, we had a few days leave. Well, then when we got home, they said, oh, well, never mind, it's another 3 months and you'll be out. And that's the way we felt. We all thought we'd be back home, like, and somebody else would take our place. So we were, the nearer the time it was getting to come out, we were getting better. Thinking, oh, well, somebody else has got to go through all what we've gone through.
And of course, the war came along to change this.
Exactly, yeah.
Do you recall what you were doing the day?
Sunday morning, and I remember hearing something on the radio, and I couldn't quite grasp what it was. I said, well, what's that? The lad next to me said, he says, we've declared war on Germany. I said, never. He says, right. And of course, one group went to another and discussing it. Blimey. It looks as if we're going to be here for a long time now. Oh, never mind, he said. It'll be over in 6 months. We'll be there in 6 months. Which,
there was a general attitude.
That was the general attitude. And other lads said, "Poh, war broker, I'm not for soldiering. I'm off. First chance I get, I'm to that gate and away." And he said, "No way are they going to keep me as a soldier."
Did many go, do you know?
I don't know, really. I know one or two went. But I don't think a lot went in, really, altogether. I can't recall anybody that said they were going and actually did go. There's lots said they were going, but I know several that said they were going didn't go in the end. Whether they were scared or not, I don't know. Well, they knew that the Red Caps would fetch them back anyway.
Did the training change in any way once war had been declared?
No. No, it was it's all hustle and bustle in the barracks at that time. I suppose it changed over from peacetime to wartime footings. To see that everybody, immediate check on rifles. Check, make sure you've got your rifle. And all the equipment. Well, very soon after that, towards the end of September, we were transferred to the Maltings in Shrewsbury to make way for a new batch that was expected to come in. Well, Maltings was a very different place than the barracks at Shrewsbury. Hard, dirty, cold, thick concrete floors to lie on, straw, polyass, toilets outside, great wooden steps to climb up to the billets, rat-infested place. I was glad to get away from there. We only stayed there for a few weeks, and then from then on, we were transferred down to the Cotswolds to a territorial unit, 6th Battalion Durham Light Infantry.
Did you ever discover why you were moved from one regiment to the other?
Well, they told us that the Durham regiment was, and the Kearsley was sister regiments, and the Durham regiment was under strength, and we were to be transferred to them to make up full wartime strength. And that's about all.
What was your own feelings about leaving your own county regiment to go to another?
At first we were angry. Very angry, because have shiny buttons and shiny cap badge. You know, and spent a lot of time polishing them. And then the battalion we had transferred, 6th Battalion, because they had black buttons and black cap badge, and there was no polishing. Really, we were grateful after, because we were angry at the time we were transferred, but thinking later on, well, we come better off because we don't have to polish the buttons and the cap badge. There was a lot of ill feeling at the beginning, but once we met the fellas and the officers, you know, got down to brass tack talking, we accepted them and we fitted in great. And each group made their own way. There were some Durhams, some Kearsley, some. It was like that all the way through. Now, a few Durhams, a few Kearsley. And they made parties up and went out boozing and introducing our lads to local families, and altogether it was very much better than the Maltings and more interesting than being at Copthorne, really, because we got down to serious stuff then, longer marches, field training, a lot of field training.
What did form did that take?
Range, 303 range and the boys' anti-tank gun range, which was just behind the building. It's a makeshift range, boys' anti-tank. It was hopeless. It would blow your shoulder off. There was more damage done to the soldiers, I think, than what the gun would do to the tanks.
What did it look like, this boy's rifle?
It's about 4'6", 5 foot long. Long, thin, sort of type of Bofors barrel, but of course it was only the 25 millimetre. It's like a cannon, more or less. But the recoil was terrific, and when you fired it, it didn't matter how you held it. You could held it as firm as you like. It'd blow your shoulder around. Now, if you're too stiff, it'd damage your shoulder, the blade of your shoulder.
Was it very efficient?
Not in our opinion, no. It's supposed to go and penetrate the steel. But then you've got to, at 100 yards, you've got to have nerve steel to fire it at that. And by the time you'd fired it, the thing would be on top of you because you're still recovering from your shoulder. But in action, I think most of them dumped them. They just wouldn't. They're too heavy to carry anyway, for one bloke to carry. And even when we went to France, most of them dumped them. They wouldn't carry them about with them, and they wouldn't fire them. They're frightened of them.
Were there any other weapons that were that were coming in that you hadn't used before?
The weapon that replaced that, we had to replace it, was the 37mm Hotchkiss. It's a French gun. Now, we were shown a piece of steel and said it would knock a 2-inch lump of steel out of a tank. But I'm afraid they were mistaken about that, because some of the shells, they bounced off the tanks. Of course, they underestimated the armour of the German tanks. It's all right for the thin armoured ones, or armoured cars, but not for Tiger tanks and heavier type. But nevertheless, it deterred them. Once you hit them, it stopped them.
Was it an easier weapon to fire than the
boys? Oh, yes, very much easier. And it was on wheels, see, and you could manoeuvre it better. So you didn't feel any recoil. The recoil was all in the trail legs. But it was a deterrent. It's the best we could do.
Were there any other weapons, for example, mortars? Were you getting any experience with mortars?
No, I didn't have much experience with mortars then. No, apart from the 2-inch mortar, which was an infantry weapon where you carried it with you. That was quite easy, but then again, it's close range. But I can't remember much of the 3-inch mortar then, at all. Well, I wasn't interested in the mortar side. I was just interested in what I'd got to do. I was on the anti-tank gun, and that was my interest.
Which company were you with, Mr. Davis?
It was C Company then.
And who commanded it?
Captain Black. Captain Black? Lieutenant Proud, I think. And Lieutenant Allison. I think that's the other name, yes. Allison. All pretty good officers. Very understanding. You know, lads got well with them. It was all I could do is relay the orders from Brigade HQ, which was always in the dark. You know, not very clear. Well, we'll move to so-and-so place. And then just get there, oh, we've got to go back to so-and-so. All haywire it was. The guard's orders. The telephone and radio never worked properly.
The NCOs in your company, do you recall them?
Pardon?
Do you recall your NCOs?
Yes. One or two. The corporals more than anything else, because they were more or less with us. Corporals, lance corporals, sergeants. I can't remember many sergeants there, but there were. They used to visit us, one gun to the other, or relay the orders, tell us what's wanted, and just carry out their orders.
How was your company constituted exactly? As again, say, rifle companies and specialist guns like your own. How was the company made up?
We were alongside the rifle companies. I mean, we were close support, and you're always up with the rifle companies, and we're expected to be pushed from wherever it was needed, wherever guns were needed or wherever mortars were needed, pushed to that place.
How many guns were there in the company, Hotchkiss guns?
Four. A troop of guns. Yeah.
And how many men made up a gun unit?
Four. Four men and one NCO.
And how were the duties or responsibilities of the men? How were they organised?
Well, setting up of the gun, the trail legs, opening the trail legs, setting up the gun, there was a firer, a gun layer, and a reserve man too, and the ammunition too, seconding a band.
But what kind of speed, what kind of time would be between getting your initial order and getting your gun into action? How long would that take?
I can't quite remember the time, but I know that was one of the things we practiced and practiced and practiced. It was insisted on us. We know that it was for our benefit. The quicker we can get into action and fire that gun, and the quicker out, the better it was for us. Because once they found the gun, the tanks would leather you. So it was a case of get in, get a few shots off to whatever you were firing at. If it was heavy tanks and they started firing back, pack up and out before they could hit you and move to somewhere else.
And was the gunman handled all the time?
Yes. Not all the time, no. Several places it was manhandled, because you couldn't always get the vehicle to where you wanted the gun for the best position, you see. So perhaps you'd manhandle it 50-100 yards. Another time you could drive straight up and drop it in with a vehicle.
Which vehicle pulled it or carried it?
There were 1500-weight trucks then. The Bedford 1500-weight, the small trucks.
What other vehicles did you have in the unit, other than trucks?
Jeeps, Morrises, three-tonners, and that's about all. It's all, the heavier stuff was further back at A. Ashland, but it's all pretty light stuff what we got. The first speed and moved about quickly.
Because it was part of a motorised division.
Yes, yeah.
And you did a great deal of motorised training.
That's right, yes, yeah. We were expected to, even for getting on and off trucks, we practised that. Debussing and embussing, as they called it. You know, see how quick we can get on and off. Can't remember the time, but I know it was quick, and I don't want it to get hurt. Try to do it too quick.
In the early days, were there plenty of vehicles? Had you had to requisition civilian vehicles?
It started off where there's enough vehicles, but like everything else, you get breakdowns. And then it was two crews on one vehicle, until it got probably four crews on one vehicle. You know, as time went on, they got less and less and less, and there were just not the replacements there. Well, the way things were going, they hadn't got time to replace them.
How were you received by the civilian population around you in the Cotswolds?
Very well, very well. The civilian population were helpful. Well, to them, it gave them a better way of life, because we always had arranged dances, which they'd never had before, or probably once or twice a year. Now they'd got a sort of a dance held every fortnight. Something always going on. To them it was great, and for us it was great, because they accepted us into their homes. I even had my meals in there. I could have slept there sometimes, but regulations say you've got to be back at the barracks.
Where were you stationed?
I was stationed Hook Norton, a little village. It's only about a mile, or just over a mile from start to finish. But mind, there was seven pubs in and around that village, which is ideal for troops. One dance hall, which we used for conferences and lectures and all that. One church, nice little church. But there's seven pubs, and also we're billeted in the yard of the local Hook Norton brewery. Now this brewery, we thought, oh great, we'll have bags of free beer, but we're wrong. We didn't get any free beer because it was off limits. Although the yard was only about 25 yards across from the brewery to the billet, we were forbidden to go to that brewery, and they made sure that we didn't go. The billet itself was old storerooms, granary rooms, really. And we used the top floor of a granary room, up some great wooden steps, and just slept side by side with the beds polyas laid out, blankets folded up, and that's the way we were. A lot warmer than the Maltings of Shrewsbury, because it was wooden floor instead of concrete. But altogether it was acceptable.
Were you pretty tightly capped?
The ablutions were downstairs. Now, in the morning, it was cold, I had to go downstairs and have a wash and shave. And
were these undercover or outside?
They were undercover, yes, yeah. Yeah.
And were you pretty tightly packed together?
Yes, there wasn't much room between each one. Say, a couple of foot between, or less, between each one. Well, when you get a room full of blokes breathing heavy, the warm air, you know, keeps it warm.
And you're on palliasses on the floor?
Yes, yeah.
And where did you, your uniform and equipment, where were you able to keep that?
Well, there were some storerooms underneath. There was what they call the armoury. All the vital equipment was kept locked up in the armoury. And that's apart from your personal weapons, like.
Where did you eat?
There was a dining room in one of the portions of the lower half. We ate in there. But it wasn't very many that ate at all. And we nearly always ate out with a family of friends. Gone, and we'd get invited to dinner. That's whenever possible. Of course, if we were on route, long route marches, we were never. We just had a packed lunch.
In the route march situation, you were part of a crew of a gun. Was it just a normal route march for you? You had to take part in that just as everyone else had to?
At Hook Norton, it wasn't till later we got the gun. We were just trained purely as an infantryman then, up to then. But we knew we were expecting to get a gun. But right up to the last minute, we never got these guns. Till we got to France. Now we trained as an ordinary rifleman. Field craft training, plenty of that, plenty of sport, plenty of route marches, anything that will keep you fit.
Did you get involved with the local people on the sporting side as well?
Only once, I think. I think they arranged a football match between some locals and the army.